Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
We're still chewing Ben Higgins on some Roundtable Pizza as we get started here on another edition of our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. It is presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It's pizza royalty. Joined by the full crew today, we've got the crew in shorts on one side, if you're watching on YouTube, Craig Elston, Chris Ello, and myself. And we've got pants crew on the other side. We've got Stephen Woods, Tony Gwynn Jr., and Annie Heilbrun. Hello, everybody. Obviously, the last week, Padres splitting six games, three with the Rockies, and then the two out of three against the Twins. I'll just start, Chris. Anybody losing any optimism or anything from where we were last week, which was pretty much a high point of the season for the San Diego Padres?
Well, if you're only as good as your last at bat, then the Padres are terrible because their last at bat wasn't very good. But no, I don't think so. I mean, you had an injury to Ha-Seong Kim in there, which I think is a factor.
We'll discuss.
And I know we will. I hope that they get him back, you know, sooner rather than later. But no, I think the optimism is still there. I mean, it was ridiculous to expect that they were going to continue to go 16 out of 19 the rest of the way. So, you know, tread a little water and then hopefully catch one more hot streak before the season's over.
Any reason, Annie, for you to douse any of the optimism that we had last week?
I don't think so. I mean, I think losing Ha-Seong Kim is something you got to work around. And Matt Waldron, perhaps a little bit, right? You got to figure that out, what's going on there in the rotation. But they're going to have some off days in September. They've got a little ways to get creative here. So I think they're still pretty much in control of their own destiny at this point.
Craig, you're always a big picture, baseball's a long season sort of guy. Kind of seems like just a normal week of Padres baseball. We've had so few of those that this last one almost seems out of the ordinary because it was so just kind of down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, losing a series in Colorado is something we're all used to, and I guess we just put it on the board. You know, Rockies owned the Padres this year. They took 8 out of 13. So be it. You came home, you faced a really, really good Minnesota Twins team, and you took 2 out of 3. So that's 9 series out of 10. The goal isn't to win literally every game. The goal is to make the playoffs, and the Padres are well on their way.
Tony, what did you see this week with the team? Just any observations?
No, I just think it was normal week of baseball. They bounced back after a rough series in Colorado. As Craig said, you know, it doesn't feel great, but I think we kind of expect that those type of things to happen there. And then they came home and they took care of a really good Twins team. I can't disagree with anything said. I think it was just one of those normal, as you said, weeks.
And Woods, even you, who does tend to panic a little bit sooner than the rest of us, didn't seem overly concerned.
Not this year.
This year
has not been a lot of panic. This year has been a lot of faith, and you know, I really liked what Kevin Acey said in his newsletter this morning when he was talking about, you know, you may have the propensity to roll your eyes after Mike Schilt's comments after the game yesterday about, I love that last, you know, I love how they battled and all that, but you know, man, when your team has had 32 come from behind victories, it certainly has relaxed me as a fan. I don't get as, I'm not pacing as much as I used to. So no, man, 3-3. You hate losing those games against the Rockies. You hate it, but can't do anything about it now. You took care of biz against the Twins. I was really happy with that series win.
Well, let's talk about the injury to Ha-Seong Kim, which hopefully will be a minimal stay on the injured list. All indications are should be back close to when the 10 days are up. Now, I think we all pay close enough attention that even though Mike Schilt won't say so, the plan is to stick Tyler Wade in there as they've done the last couple of days against righties, and the new Mason McCoy call-up probably this weekend against some lefties. So, Tony, is that the right plan for the Padres, given the fact that they're probably giving up some offensive opportunities? You could shift over someone and get Donovan Solano's bat into the lineup, but that's not, at least so far, what Mike Schilt has done with Ha-Sung Kim out.
I mean, it's always a possibility they could get to that, but this is where feel as a manager comes into play. I think you finally have a pretty comfortable Xander Bogaerts at second. You don't want to move him off that spot. Jake could go over there and play short, but, you know, moving positions is as much as we like to just move pieces around, it's not easy. And the shortstop position in particular is one of the premier spots. So he'll take the defense where he can get it there. I think you're right. We're going to see a little bit of McCoy. We're going to see a little bit of T. Wade. And if, you know, push comes to shove and, like, those guys are struggling, they're, you know, costing them runs, they may look at that, but You can't upset the apple cart with what you got going on already.
Woods, when does push come to shove? Tyler Wade was inserted on Sunday when Ha-Sung Kim got hurt. He is 0-for-11 since being inserted. How long do you kind of go? Because you obviously see the finish line of Ha-Sung Kim hopefully coming back, but they're not getting anything out of that ninth spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said today, if he and McCoy can just play defense well,
right,
I'm good. I mean, again, 1-7, you know, 1-8, sometimes when Higgy's on a heater, man, like, it's fine. It is absolutely fine. You're not going to have world beaters up and down the lineup. Now, Tyler Wade has done some other things this season, like got the ability to lay down a bunt, got the ability to steal a big bag. Play defense. That's really all I need you for. I mean, Mike Schilt, where did he come from? He came from St. Louis. Values defense. You know, values the ability to steal a bag and lay down bunts and things like that. Tyler Wade's great for that. But so if you can play D and you can do those things, he's really kind of like the last of my worries. As long as he plays defense, I don't care.
Craig, this is valid baseball wisdom coming from Tony and Woodsy. But I'll also say one of the things Padres have done really well this year and has led to their success is all the production they've gotten at the bottom of their lineup. And all of a sudden, harder to see that with the lineup construction with Tyler Wade and or Mason McCoy in it. How big of a concern is that?
You know, the funny thing is, Ben, I've heard from certain segments of the Padres fandom through the summer that Ha-Sung Kim was the problem with the offense and that the team would be better if he wasn't on the field. And it was because he was such a terrible hitter and such an impediment to their offense. Ha-Sung Kim is still fourth on this team in F-War. And there's this huge, huge disparity between Padres fans watching Kim play every day and going, man, he's not as good at shortstop as he was last year. Or, I thought he was better in other years. I don't think his hitting is as good. And, like, you're not watching all the other shortstops in big league baseball. This guy's a valuable part of this team. He's going to get paid good money in the offseason because of it. So losing him is a blow. And as a result, you know, you're stuck with something for a few days, but I think the Padres' game plan is the correct one.
And Annie, the timing of this injury couldn't have really been worse because Ha-Sung Kim actually was heating up and maybe taking some of his best swings of the season, had the home run, had the nearly game-tying home run that turned into the ground rule double, but his OPS over the last couple of weeks has been as high as we've seen all year.
Yeah, he was, and I think he's disappointed about that. You know, he felt that he was heating up, and he saw that too, but I think this is a lineup that can overcome it. It doesn't seem like it's going to be, hopefully, too much longer than the 10 days or maybe a little bit past that. They don't think it's super, super serious. You've got production off the bench for the most part. I think you try to just shore up the holes in defense. And I agree with you. Like, I continue to move Jake Cronenworth around the field in my head. But really, it's not that fair to Jake Cronenworth. We've seen him do it, but I don't know that he wants to maybe make that change to shortstop long term.
There's a whole lot to do about three games, too, by the way. I think Ha-Sung got hurt the last day in Colorado. They played these last three games. T. Wade has been inserted in the lineup in that time. I mean, it's three games.
Yep. Chris, would you consider a more drastic temporary solution at shortstop?
I would if he's going to be out longer. I don't know that Tyler Wade plays every day if Ha-Seong Kim is out to the middle of September. To me, at that point, I think you'd have to take a look at what he's doing and consider moving Cronenworth to short and getting Solano's bat in. But if you only got to survive another week, I think it's okay. I do want to say one thing about Ha-Seong Kim. Analytics love Ha-Seong Kim. I still don't love Ha-Seong Kim.
I mean, both things can be true, right? Ha-Seong can be have extreme value for this ball club, but has not played at as good defensively this year as he did last year when he won the Gold Glove.
You know,
if you're watching those games, I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I saw an ESPN projection of free agency coming up this offseason, and they're saying Ha-Seong Kim, you know, 100 to 200 million guy for a contract.
Good for you, Ha-Seong.
I just kind of resigned myself to the fact that this was probably going to be Ha-Seong Kim's last season. There's so many shortstops on the roster. Invest that money somewhere else. I don't know if any of you now have taken like a second thought about that, seeing what kind of problems not having Ha-Seong Kim has created in just a few days, and whether the Padres may need to find a way to get Ha-Seong Kim on the roster next year, even if it is going to cost a pretty penny to bring him back. Annie?
I think they would love to keep Ha-Seong Kim, but I think he's going to get more value going out. I just don't know that they, with all the other things that they need and their financial situation being what it is, that they will be able to afford him.
Yeah, I never thought it was going to be an easy decision, but you know, that's a lot of money when if the projections are indeed accurate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have Jackson Merrill didn't, you know, he was a shortstop prior to this season. If that's, you know, the way they want to go, it's going to be a tough one. I mean, it would be tough, in my opinion, to lose a guy like Ha-Seong, because it's more than just what he brings defensively on this team. He's a part of the
he's
glue.
Beloved,
yeah, he's
man.
Part
beloved.
Of the glue. And listen, it's a business, you know. Guys change teams all the time, so that's not going to be the only decision that why to keep him. But it'll be tough to see Ha-Seong go if that's the case.
Gut feeling, if Ha-Seong Kim is gone next year and they don't go out and acquire yet another shortstop, who is the shortstop for the Padres? I know that's a long-term question, but is Tatis back? Is it Merrill? Is it Bogart sliding back? I mean, it's hard to see him going back to short after adjusting to second for a year. Craig, where do you think this is headed long-term?
We asked this question a month or two ago, and I said Merrill, and everyone was like, you know, because, but, you know, for good reason. He's been incredible in center field, but he is 21. He's been a shortstop his whole life, and I feel like that transition for him, especially if you gave him the winner and said you're going to be the shortstop next year, is one that he would probably take to and thrive. And having said that, the other thing I would add is I think it's going to be much more difficult to replace Ha-Seong Kim's value as a shortstop on the market in terms of for just sure. going out there and getting
sure.
anyone else than it is to replace him internally.
All right, let's move on, unless anyone has any other thoughts on that, to the other kind of now pressing issue for the Padres, and that's Matt Waldron's spot in the starting rotation. And Matt Waldron, no one's going to deny, was maybe the Padres' most consistent starting pitcher for much of this season, but just has not gone well, and it wasn't just you know the last start against the Twins, but it's been several starts now. Chris, are you comfortable Matt Waldron making another start, or do the Padres need to figure out something else by the time Monday's turn in the rotation in St. Louis comes around for Matt Waldron again?
He's pitching like a fifth starter now, after pitching much above that for most of the season. But no, I don't have any problem putting him in. I really don't. Everybody goes through big-time slumps, and if you, especially at the back end of a rotation. To me, if you take out everybody from the rotation when they have a bump in the road for three or four starts, you're never going to have a consistent rotation at all. I'm fine with it. Score him some runs early. You know, make a couple of more plays behind him. You know, he at the tail end of that performance yesterday, he was getting ripped pretty hard. But prior to that, I saw some dunkers. I don't overreact to Matt Waldron's bad starts when he had 2.5 months of good ones.
You're right. I mean, Dylan Cease had some clunkers. Michael King started the year slowly. That is true. But, Craig, there are other signs as well. There's talk of fatigue. There's talk of some, you know, elbow whatever that, you know, was brought up after the game by Matt Waldron. Have we reached the point where the Padres do need to consider something else here, even if it's just temporary for a couple of starts?
Consider 100%. 100%. What would I do? I'd probably find a way to put Matt Waldron on the IL this week, is what I would do. and have Randy Vasquez come up, take that next turn, and whether he does need a little bit of a rest because, you know, he says he's feeling, you know, the effects of the season, or whether it's a matter of getting over to the pitching lab and trying to get things rejiggered. The comments he, not only the way he pitched yesterday, and remember, I'm America's number one Matt Waldron backer, all right, so coming from a position of love, but the way he pitched yesterday took it from struggling to lost for me. I feel like he's lost the plot a little bit on his mix, on what he's been doing. He threw the knuckleball less than he ever had, and he got absolutely hammered as a result. Sending him to AAA is not going to help him at all. I think that ends his season if you send him to AAA and have him start giving up bombs in El Paso. But getting a little break from the rotation, I would be fine if they made that choice.
Woods, we talked about some of the possible alternatives on our show, and there wasn't any slam dunk, oh, this would be an easy switch out to try to replace Matt Waldron.
I think Randy Vasquez is, I think he earned it, you know, and I think he's done some good things this year. I think he slots in a little bit better at the five spot than Matt Waldron does right now. Certainly, I like Craig's idea. But yeah, the sending him down to El Paso, where the air is thin and the ball flies. And I mean, Vasquez has pitched better at the big league level than he has in El Paso.
Yeah,
this
over
year.
80 ERA since they sent him back so in El Paso. But
yeah, again, man, like, I've liked what Randy has done sometimes this year. And yeah, man, it's a fifth starter going up against the Cardinals. But if it ends up being Matt Waldron, I wonder too, like, do the results of this four-game series have anything to do with that as well? Like, if you go out and win three or four or sweep, would be incredible. You're like, oh, yeah, maybe we can run Matty out there and see if he can figure it out against St. Louis. But, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, there's no huge option. Like, well, it just makes sense now to get this kid up. He's banging at the door. Let's give him a shot. But I'm fine with Vasquez. And honestly, I'm probably fine with Waldron, too, on Monday.
Vasquez is on turn, so his next scheduled start would be on Monday, which makes a lot of sense. But, Annie, what about the other options? Johnny Brito, who was trying to stretch him out, came up and had a decent relief outing for the Padres. Also, a minor leaguer, Omar Cruz, is it, who's been throwing well, a left-hander at AAA.
Yeah.
Would you consider any of the other alternatives?
I think you could consider them. I think you look at Matt Waldron, and he's been so terrific for the Padres. I mean, he's been arguably their most consistent pitcher through a stretch there for that rotation. He is learning how to pitch his first year in the big leagues where everything is more intense in a pennant race. He's done terrific. I think when you hear his comments, and he was heartbroken after the game last night. I mean, you could tell how much it meant to him. He was sad that he couldn't come through for the team. He talked about how his arm was barking a little bit. He was feeling a little bit of fatigue, but he felt like he could keep going. I think you give him a blow. You bring up Randy Vasquez, you bring up one of these other guys, and then try to kind of assess from him where he's at after that point.
Now, Woods, you fairly pointed out that Waldron always looks sad.
He does.
He's just got sad
he does.
Face.
He's got sad face. He does. I'm like, man, are you okay? Like, are you okay?
No, I'm good.
He's good.
I'm fine.
Tony, what about you on just the other options for Waldron? You know, what are you thinking?
I mean, I don't know that the options are, you know, any better. I think if he's hurting and they need to give him a breather, they can find a way to do that in the schedule coming up. There's some off days where you can shift some guys around but you know, they don't have a ton of options. And you know, again, the race is to September 20 whatever that day is, the last day, that's the race. And so I think given him getting healthy or feeling better or, you know, getting through this fatigue spot, you keep throwing him out there. If you need to, you know, give Vasquez a shot in there somewhere to kind of supplement some of that rest, you do so. But these are the guys we got moving forward. And I don't think much is going to change. There's not going to be any drastic changes that happen moving forward.
Feel free to wrap it up a few days before the last day of September.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I mean, Tony, I know you got the low heartbeat. The rest of us can't take that kind of stress in our lives. You know,
I can see that.
Coming down to the last day of the season. It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by Roundtable Pizza. It's pizza royalty. And since you brought up the Mets series, I'm just going to jump right ahead. It's Craig, it's been a long time since I think you've called for a red alert for the Padres. And I don't know that we're even at yellow alert right now.
No, we're in.
But this series against the Mets is pretty important because when you look at the standings, the Mets are the first team that are out of the playoff picture right now. They're 5.5 games behind the Padres, game and a half behind the Atlanta Braves. This is a series that they are circling as a huge opportunity for them to get back into the race. So
right.
This, to me, is kind of the one for the Padres right now. In your mind, how important is this series compared to so everything's important now, but compared to some of the other matchups we've seen?
Well, I agree to an extent, but I'm going to actually push it out a little bit further. In the next 3 weeks, the Padres play the Mets, they play the Cardinals, and they play the Giants twice. And those are the teams under the cut line that are trying to fight their way up. If the Padres take care of business against these three teams, you don't have to sweep any of these series, but if you take care of business against these teams, effectively, you eliminate their chance to catch you. Whether or not they're going to make the sixth seed or not, you eliminate their chance to catch you. And once you get that, you could be September 15th, that's the end of the last Giants series, you could be just what you said, looking at the last 2 weeks going, we're making the playoffs. Now let's just talk about seeding.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, in some ways, a basketball analogy, you've got the lead and you're trying to run out the clock. They need to make up ground. And if you just split series, you win a little bit, you don't have to sweep, you don't have to do anything spectacular. You're trying to get those games down to zero. And once those games get down to zero, they can't catch you in the playoff race. That's what a chase, Chris, is all about. It's really running out the clock on the teams that are behind you.
Yeah, did we lose all six games last week?
No.
Because I feel like we're really, really down and out right about now.
Blame the host for his question.
Yeah, no,
he asked if I had a red alert. I was like green light. What are you talking about?
You know, I'm still thinking about, winning the division. I'm not looking behind me right now. I don't want to be Satchel Paige, in the old don't look behind you, something might be gaining. Take 3 out of 4 from the Mets, gain a little ground on the Dodgers. Win 2 out of 3 in St. Louis, maybe gain some ground. I don't think the Padres need to be looking behind them right now. They're playing so well. They go 18-16. They ought to be able to do that easy. They're going to win 90 games. It doesn't matter what happens in this Mets series. The Mets aren't going to get to 90. The Giants aren't going to get to 90, neither are the Cardinals. So I don't think this series is that big a deal unless, pray tell, you get swept. Now, you go 0-4, then the Mets make up way too much ground in 4 days. But to me, I'm looking forward right now if I'm the Padres. Man, I'm feeling good about things. I'm not worried about what's behind me, but I understand that there are a lot of fans who have maybe seen this book before that worry that, there could be something terrible happening around the corner here the last 4.5 weeks, but I don't see it happening.
Annie, but you control your own destiny when it comes to the teams behind you. Padres just took 2 of 3 from the Twins, and they lost ground to both the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks because they didn't lose. You don't face those teams until the last week of the season, so you're not really controlling anything. You can control it against the Mets, though, and you can pretty much put them close to on ice over these next 4 days.
Yeah, and I think, look, if I'm thinking about it, I can't speak for the whole clubhouse, but it's like, you just got to get in the playoffs. You get in the playoffs, you get into the race, whether it would be great to be the division leader, it'd be great to be the top seed, it'd be great to be all these things, but if you keep winning and they keep playing their brand of baseball and they keep doing what they're supposed to be doing, good things are going to happen. They're already in that top arena of the wild card. So as long as I think they keep doing their part, I don't know mathematically how it all adjusts, but they can continue to push those other teams out and just continue to make sure that they're focusing on the playoffs.
And that first series against the Mets, obviously the Padres got swept at Citi Field. You were at that one, weren't you, Tony?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, any concern of the carryover of that, or a totally different time of the season, doesn't really apply
anymore.
Yeah, this
is a different team, too, than that point of year. I just think, all of the mathematics and, pushing everybody down is great. But I think for the Padres, it's just about them continuing to play good baseball and continue to build on the habits. Because ultimately, when you get there, you're going to want to be playing well. That's going to be the key. And so you do that by finishing off the year the way you're supposed to. You don't want to be backing in. You want to be playing good baseball. And if you do that, you ain't gonna have to worry about the Mets. You ain't got to worry about the Giants. The Dodgers may have to worry about you a little bit. And I just think they just got to keep the part. They can't control like winning two of three and losing ground. They just got to keep going out playing good baseball as they have all season.
And Woods, I don't mind a little bit of scoreboard watching. I mean, it's fun last week when the Padres are winning and Dodgers are dropping a few and you're getting closer. It can be a problem, though, when you're winning and then the other teams are winning even more. And you're like, don't get frustrated because you're not gaining ground. If you're playing good baseball, as Tony said, that's good baseball. It doesn't really matter what the other teams are doing. You can't control that.
Go 1-0, baby. 1-0, find a way to beat Severino tonight, and then we'll worry about tomorrow. And go 1-0. And, you know, listen, the stuff that Mike Schill told us in spring training about – we're going to try to put ourselves in the best position to win. Manny Machado said it. Hey, man, we didn't get the job done tonight, but we were in a position to win the game. We need to keep doing that, and it's going to fall in our favor. We all, you know, you sit and you listen. You go, oh, okay, coach speak. And then you see it happen a little bit, and you're like, oh, so they are trying to build to playing their best baseball the last day of the year, hopefully game four of the World Series that we sweep. You know, that's what their goal is, and they've been doing that. I have to give them credit for just checking off the boxes at every step.
All right, when Chris says you may be going a little too negative, that really is probably time to start consulting.
Yeah, wait, I didn't even make that connection. I'm like, wait, Chris Ello said that?
Holy so God. I am going to turn things very positive right now. I'm moving up our roundtable draft because it's a positive question, and I need something positive here to save my reputation. So here is today's roundtable draft question. By the way, we're going alphabetical order by last name for the draft, which means it's Chris, Craig, Tony, Annie, Ben, and then Woods for our draft. You have to remember, you have to choose something different that hasn't been taken yet. What do you consider the Padres' biggest strength? Chris, you get to go first.
Okay.
What do you consider the 2024 Padres' biggest strength? It could be a lineup area. It could be something a little more.
Don't lead him. You're leading the witness. You're leading the witness. Let him answer.
I'm just saying.
It
doesn't
objection.
Have to be a
leading.
Person. It can be anything.
Objection.
This is your own opinion.
Leading.
I think he's badgering.
He's badgering the witness. Yeah.
Leading and badgering.
Welcome to my nightmare.
I feel like I'm being badgered. I think their biggest strength, and I think the one that's going to show up the most in October, is the seven guys that Mike Schilt can confidently go to in the bullpen. I think it goes beyond Suarez and Scott and Jason Adam. I think that Estrada has been brilliant at times. Hopefully they can get him back to that. Morejon is a fifth. Hoeing is a sixth. And I think even Yuki Matsui is a seventh. And I don't think any team in baseball has seven guys. Now, are these seven guys not going to give up a run from now until November? I hope not, but they probably will. I just think that's as strong a group as any in baseball.
Yep. All right, bullpen is the first answer. Craig, you've got everything else to choose from with our second pick.
All right, I'm going to say that the biggest strength of this team revolves around the word contact, their ability to make contact and to prevent the other team from making contact. The Padres are 30th in the league in strikeouts. That means they put the ball in play more than every other team in Major League Baseball. They combine that by, at least last time I looked, maybe they're third now, but the second in the league in strikeouts. So they are striking out more than 28 other teams in the big leagues. That combination over the course of the season has created a style of play that is extremely conducive to winning close games against great teams in big circumstances.
All right, from the E's to the G's, Tony, you've got the third pick in our draft. What is the biggest Padres strength?
Their offensive approach. It'll be the thing that gets them to the playoffs. It'll be the thing that allows them to advance so that you can use that great bullpen they have. And they are such a diverse offense. They can get it really any way you name it, whether it's little ball, whether it's big ball, whether it's stringing together hits, whether it's slug. They got a little bit of everything. I think that is their strength.
All right, Heilbrun before Higgins. So, Annie, you've got the fourth pick in our draft.
All good selections. I will take belief, and then part of that being that they're clutch. They have been able to stay low, you know, low blood level in those clutch situations and come through. They have a belief in themselves and each other that they've proven and they've executed time after time again. And I think that that's carrying them at least a little bit. They know they can do it because they've done it before.
Yeah. All right. I've got the fifth pick. I'm going to go with depth, which obviously being tested with some injuries. But if Fernando Tatis Jr. comes back, you've got a bench that'll have both David Peralta and Donovan Solano in your corner, especially in the postseason, if everything's there. You've got different elements on the bench with speed, Wade or Johnson, who can come in as a pinch runner, guys who can lay down bunts with different skill sets, steal a base, whatever you need. Padres have used that depth to effectiveness, and at some point it's going to come through for them when they need it late in the season or in the postseason. So I'm going to go depth as the Padres' biggest strength, which leaves us pick number six for Steven Woods.
Confidence. Confidence, swagger, belief.
So you're redrafting.
Redrafting.
Pick,
pick again. Pick again. Badgering again.
All right, sandwiches. I have no idea. Like, they're a confident bunch. They're a really confident bunch. And chemistry, all of that is just so imperative. And you see it in the great teams, man. And they got it. They got it. They have so much of it. And they keep showing us all the time. They're never out of it. They're never out of a game.
Had depth been taken, my backup answer was maybe going to be Ruben Niebla. And I want to ask everybody about, because we say oftentimes on all of our shows, Ruben Niebla, the best pitching coach in the business. Love Ruben Niebla. But I'm like, what is it, Annie, about Ruben Niebla? Because it just feels like the Padres do have a secret weapon on their coaching staff that other teams don't have access to.
It sounds like he's someone who's very open-minded. Pitchers can give their ideas back to him. He'll take them in. They have good discussions around that. He gives them a lot of critiques that are also belief-based. Like, hey, you've got this. You know, like maybe if you just try this or you do this or why don't we see? It's never really like, this is what you need to do. Go out and do it. Listen to me. It is seems to be like it's a more symbiotic relationship. And
holistic.
He has a lot of belief in them, and I think he has fun with them, too. Like, he keeps it loose.
Woods, I know you're a giant Ruben Niebla fan.
Huge fan.
What is it you like about him so much?
Well, it's talking to Ben Fritz about him. It's talking to the pitchers about him as well. And it's kind of like what we said about Arise, I think, on the last roundtable, is the Padres and Ruben let these pitchers be themselves. They don't bring them in and go, you are doing this way too much. Let's play to your strength. Let's formulate a game plan. I watched them go over an offensive plan, him and Campy, and just watching how the guys look at him and respond to him is insane. And he just happens to be like the friendliest, coolest, most knowledgeable guy that I've met really down there for a long time, man. He's so smart, knows his craft inside and out. And it's back to when he first got here, the guys that had worked with him before, Clevinger and guys like that, talking about him like, dude is a witch. He is a witch when it comes to pitching.
And he feels like they care, too. I think that plays into
big time.
And Craig, like numbers wise, I don't know exactly how you break it down, but pitchers do seem to improve under his care.
Well, the way that I would characterize, similar to what's been said, I think his incredible strength is his intellectual curiosity. You know, here's somebody who is really smart and he's really dedicated and he cares about his staff, but also he is not imposing his vision per se on each guy. We had a previous pitching coach that was like, throw more sliders, just period, throw more sliders. And you don't have a uniform approach to every pitcher. He always is looking at things saying, oh, what makes this good? What could be slightly different that could make it better? And that's an intellectual curiosity that's gold.
Yeah, in the offseason, we went to the opening of the Point Loma Nazarene Biomechanics Lab where he was there. And just his kind of his fascination, his willingness to kind of learn and incorporate new things was very impressive. I mean, even Chris here has never had a bad thing to say about Ruben Niebla, right?
No, I really like Ruben Niebla. I know that as a pitcher, you don't really have as much contact with the manager. I mean, really, you spend 90% of your time with the pitching coach. And to have somebody that understands you and believes in you and imparts their wisdom for you, but using you as the template, That's you can't replace that. And I agree with what everybody said. I mean, I think I said it the other day. If they had a coach of the year in Major League Baseball, I would have to go with Ruben Niebla. I think he's done an amazing job. The guy right behind him would be our hitting coach,
Victor Rodriguez. Yeah, so two really good.
We got two really good coaches there, and. Martin Perez, he kind of opened my eyes to it when he got here. Because, I mean, this guy's a guy who couldn't get anybody out. All of a sudden had a 1.9 ERA for three starts. And, he basically said that, he made suggestions. He didn't tell me what I needed to do. He made suggestions what I could do. And, it obviously worked for him.
Tony, you've obviously received more baseball coaching than the rest of us. From your dad, from coaches, growing up, Poway, San Diego State, minor leagues, major leagues. What is it about Ruben Niebla? And overall, what do you think makes a successful baseball coach?
I think a foundation starts with just being a solid dude. And I think that's where all of the good coaches start from. And then the curiosity becomes the thing, especially as the game starts to change. How many can evolve as the game starts to change from what they know, and he's at the very tip top of guys who've been able to do that. I think being able to relate to the players in a way that is a suggested way, but them feeling like he wants them to succeed. I think that's all in character and kind of who you are without the uniform on. And I think that's why Ruben is so successful.
No names, but what kind of qualities do you see when you think, this isn't a great coach?
Well, here's the thing. It also is reading the type of player you have, right? There are some guys that are better when you are direct and, telling them how it
do
is.
This.
Right. There are some guys who need that, but there are a lot more guys, especially in today's game, that don't vibe with that. And so I think part of the duty as a coach is to figure out what kind of buttons you can push, if you need to push any buttons at all, and if that individual is the type that receives that type of information a certain way. And that's part of the job of a coach. And I think the really good ones, the ones that we're consistently talking about, Victor, Ruben, Mike, these guys, they do that, and they do it really well.
Kind of overdue for a commercial, except this is the commercial-free 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. All right, it is time to put on your A.J. Preller hat for a minute. And we may have discussed this even earlier in the season. I tried to kind of search through it to see if we did, but circumstances have changed. Put together your best contract offer for Jurickson Profar. Ooh. To remain in a Padres uniform without letting him test the free agent market, but also without breaking the bank and becoming a problem or an albatross in a few years. Where is the sweet spot in finding Jurickson Profar's, get him back here, but you don't necessarily have to hammer him over the head with the most money you've ever given anybody? Chris, what would you offer to Jurickson to get him back here?
$10 million.
1 year?
No, a couple years with the option. But I'm not great on money stuff. Yeah. To me, Profar is worth a lot based on what he did this season. But I would be a little hesitant to break the bank. I'm always wary of a player that, as much as I love this guy, that has 11 seasons at this level and one season at this level. I think it's difficult to pay him for that one season. So I think you have to, find something in the middle there. And that's why, it's a good question. It's a hard one.
Isn't that the question that the Padres front office, Craig, is probably pondering, when AJ's with Josh Stein and everybody and they're going, well, we want Jurickson, obviously. We don't want him to hit the free agent market and start shopping around, but we can't necessarily just act like he's a premium free agent because he was an all-star this 1 year. Where do you land on something that seems both fair to both sides?
Right, and of course, Jurickson also remembers when he hit the market last time, also coming off an over 3-WAR season in left field, mm-hmm. and wound up at the end of spring training taking a deal with Colorado because all the other GMs were asking the exact same question that Chris just asked. It's a more refined version of the exact same question once again, and Jurickson's 2 years older, back on market. Without getting into actual numbers, the thing I would imagine is an AJ Preller special. a three-year deal, an opt-out after one. If Jurickson actually back-to-back puts up, you know, MVP top 10 seasons, he can try and get out there and get paid. But otherwise, you've probably got him for the remaining 3 years of his athletic peak.
Andy, I think this is psychologically interesting for Jurickson as well, because he obviously likes it here, which kind of lowers your leverage knowing he wants to come back. At the same time, Jurickson has a lot of pride. I mean, you know, he's a strong-willed player, and he's going to want value for what he thinks he's worth. You don't ever hire Scott Boras as a client unless you're trying to maximize your value. Now, he's not with Boras anymore, right? Is that correct?
Right,
but
right.
That doesn't change the fact.
Can't imagine why.
That doesn't change the fact, though, that he's going to want to feel like he's been respected and paid for what he deserves.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a puzzled, because we don't know what the market is going to pay for him. He absolutely deserves his bag. He deserves all the money that he can possibly get, or the years or the contract. He's worked for it, not just this year, but his whole career. You know, he's worked to get to the year that he's having right now. And that approach hasn't changed for him. I mean, he's been that guy. He's had it click for him consistently this year. On the other hand, he gave a quote to Kevin Acey in the UT earlier this year that he could be living on an island somewhere and he didn't need to play, but he wanted to come back and play. He wanted to be part of this, you know. So I'm not exactly sure where his headspace is at in terms of, you know, I guess what kind of, discount or what he might want years-wise. But I absolutely think he should be respected for the work that he's done. And I don't know what that number is. Is it like 2 years, 24? Is it? My AJ Preller hat does not fit, so I don't know.
Tony, obviously you had some experience with this. You also saw your dad stay in San Diego, take less money over and over again on contracts because he wanted to be here. He liked it here. I don't think there's really any reason for players to do that anymore, but Jurickson is an interesting case.
He is. I still agree that he loses leverage because he can't become a free agent. If the Padres don't want to allow him to be a free agent, they kind of cancel each other out. I can see him, you know, I don't know how many years, but I can see he's deserving of somewhere between 12 to 15 a year. At least that's at the very starting point, I think. Will that be here? That's tough, man. And I don't remember. I think he got 9 the year. He ended up signing a one-year $9 million deal with the Rockies.
And opted out of 8, I think, here.
He opted.
Was it 8?
He opted out of 8.
He got $1 million and late.
So I think that's probably reigning in the back of his head, as Craig said. Like, he had a good year and then went to free agency and the market didn't materialize. This is a better year, and maybe him doing it again changes some team's mind in terms of what they want to offer him in terms of a multi-year deal. He's so deserving of it. But it's a tough question. Padres have some tough questions. As
they
we
do.
Went over the Kim situation, Profar. At this point, Kim. Though, I don't – in AJ, we trust, I guess, because what the job he's put together this year in terms of putting this roster together, when he had a lot of the same type – things hanging over his head, he's pulled it off.
And he does love being here, and
so
him
much.
And AJ have a long relationship.
Yes, they do.
But what's, you know, baseball is a cold game sometimes when contracts come around, and Jurickson is now 32?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, no one's projecting the best years of his career are still to come. I mean, it'd be shocking if this wasn't the best year of his career. Correct?
Yes.
I mean, you take three quarters of this next year, sign up for it right now. It's several million dollars.
Sure.
You'd be really happy with that. He's not getting any better, but he's going to want to get paid for kind of what he's done.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because I think we've all kind of over the last 10 years have fallen into this pattern that as you get older, you can't be productive. Now, you lose your athleticism. Maybe your game as an entire whole is not the same. But I've seen plenty of guys get better with the actual skill of hitting, as we've seen a guy like Jurickson Profar. He's a much better hitter, right, at the ages of 30, 31, and now 32, than he was at any point of his early career. And so the skill of hitting, you see guys often. Now, the question becomes, can he maintain his body to be able to put himself in position to take those swings? But I don't necessarily know that his production in terms of offense has to go down. I think we could see something around this number, these numbers, as we're starting to see it kind of tail off into what we're like 290, 291 right now, somewhere around there. I can see him getting close to that. I mean, that's who they projected him to be at the very beginning of his career. So I think it's just taking time. But it's not a guarantee that as you get older, especially in this early 30s age, I should say, that you just tail off and can't play no more.
All right, seventh inning stretch time. It's our 97th.
You didn't let me answer. $70 million, 68 deferred.
Thanks. There you go.
Okay.
Perfect.
Great answer.
Done. Cool. 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by Roundtable Pizza. It's pizza royalty. Seventh inning stretch time. A little fun question for you. Obviously, yesterday's game was not fun, kind of ugly, but not that bad in baseball terms, an 11-4 loss. The question is, what is the worst sporting event you ever attended? Whether it was just bad competition, or you just had no fun whatsoever, or the team you were cheering for just got absolutely demolished, and you were like, I wish I wasn't here. I wish I was somewhere else. Anyone want to start with worst? Annie seems like
I'm going to start with the many, many years that I taught dance competitions and sitting in a theater watching awful, awful routines, one after the other, or cheer, one after the other. It was like, I mean, for those, I will give that. I will give that. And that's, you know, no disrespect to the dancers out there, but, you know, someone just got to get in class a little bit more, learn the routines a little better.
Yeah, I didn't actually, it was 2021, so we were doing the games
remotely.
And it was, oh, my Lord, it was the Pittsburgh Pirate-Padre game, Blake Snell on the mound. I'm trying to remember who the other guy was.
It was a day game.
They were just, it was awful.
It's excruciating.
It was 4 hours plus of nine-inning baseball. I promised, it took me about 2 weeks to actually feel normal after that game.
That game, I remember that game.
It was so awful. Me and Jesse still talk about it to this day.
This was a few years ago.
This was in 21.
It
was
20.
It was one of Blake's worst. I think he didn't get out the first inning.
No, he didn't. Walk.
The guy behind him didn't do much better. It was like a crazy record amount of walks in that game.
Oh, man.
It was awful.
Mine was definitely Hannah and our first baseball game. I think it was that opening day against the Dodgers.
Oh, 15-0.
Yeah,
they got shut out for the whole series.
We parked a good solid
opening
six
day,
miles too. Away from Petco. And we walked as our first game together. And she wasn't the world's biggest baseball fan then.
Wow.
And we were roasting in the sun, and they just got bodied. And I think we made it like three innings, which is about an inning longer than I make it these days. So that's pretty good. That one, though, was the worst sporting event I've ever been to.
Greg, you and I sat through some really bad Padres games from 2000 to 2003 when we were hosting the pre- and the post-game show. Actually, one of the more interesting ones, but excruciating ones, was it A.J. Burnett's no-hitter? When the Padres,
he walked nine and hit
another guy.
Yeah, I think he actually broke Bubba Trammell's hand,
and still the Padres could not get one single hit. Talk about effectively wild. Got to be the ugliest no hitter in the history of baseball. And when your team's on the wrong end of the ugliest no hitter in the history of baseball, that one always stands out to me.
And I remember that one. And I remember that was back in the time that we had to leave the ballpark after like six innings to get back to Kogo. So we were like watching in this little TV going like, I can't believe it. Later in our illustrious tenure, I don't know if you remember the game, and it had to have been 03, when we played Atlanta. It was a day game. Jarrett Wright started. The final was 15-2. Liquid Blue sang the national anthem. And when they came out to sing, it was the voices of a barbershop quartet.
That's right. They played the wrong team.
Hello.
Yes. That's hilarious.
That was the single worst Padres game I've ever been to. And I'm sure Chris and I could sympathize on any random Sunday college baseball game that you announced by yourself.
Five hours and 42 minutes.
Where there were seven errors and 24 runs for the other team, and you just had to keep calling the seventh, eighth, and ninth.
Those are tough. I've been in a deep depression ever since you asked the question.
I've seen a lot.
The worst game I ever saw was my freshman year at San Diego State. It was a football game. The Aztecs were 8-2. And BYU was 8-2.
Oh, no.
And the winner was going to go to the very first or second Holiday Bowl. They put the game on national television.
Oh, no.
And in those days, if it was national television, it was the one game that everyone could see, and that was the only choice. And BYU annihilated the Aztecs 63-14. After one of their touchdowns, they kicked off through the end zone. The famous chicken picked up the ball, the Ted Giannoulis, and ran it down the field. And the broadcaster said, "That's the best run San Diego State had all day." It was, I'd never been so embarrassed in my life. All my friends knew that I had gone to San Diego State. And unfortunately, that kicked off about a decade and a half of disaster for Aztec football. They didn't recover from that for 15 years.
I will say, I wasn't actually at the game, but when the Chargers finally got to the Super Bowl and played the 49ers, I'm like, it was just over before it even started.
You just knew it, too. It was like, oh, wait, that doesn't look the same.
No hope in this game whatsoever. No. And just to bring your college baseball announcing stories, I wonder if they're going to put a pitch clock in. I remember, was it you? I was doing a game. I had to go back, do the Channel 10 11 o'clock news, got done, game was still on, so I came back in extra innings and finished it afterwards, like at 12:45 a.m. I mean,
well, with my kids Little League really just starting, I mean, there's a time limit on it, but I'm ready to watch some really bad baseball pretty soon.
You got
to
get your mind wrapped around it.
I got to get my mind around it and ready and prepared.
All right, just a couple of minutes left here. Obviously, we're all anticipating the return of Fernando Tatis Jr., but other teams are getting players back as well. Yoshinobu Yamamoto for the Dodgers. We talked with Eno about that. Guys that you see having an impact on the pennant race, Chris, that may not have really been around much this season, but could be important here going forward.
Well, I hope Fernando's the number one guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I don't know about Yamamoto. The Dodgers obviously need, some more arms with some of the injuries they keep having there. But, the Giants got their guys back, made a little like they've cooled off. Diamondbacks have got their guys back, and it seems like it's helped them a lot. I know there's some other big names out there that I'm probably not thinking
Verlander
of.
Started yesterday for the Astros. I mean, he didn't.
I hope Fernando's the one that has the biggest impact. I mean, this is not – well, it is. I mean, would you rather have Bryce Johnson or Fernando? I mean, it is a – that is a large gap.
That is part of the equation, is the is what you're replacing versus what you have already, 100%. Craig. And that's a huge thing potentially for the Padres.
Yeah, and so, understanding that we do have, and I completely agree. So my official answer is Fernando Tatis Jr. We all say Fernando Tatis Jr.
With our fingers crossed. Right.
You guys next week.
We all feel that way. Just,
that's for y'all in the chat, okay? Right. That's for y'all in the chat. But I do keep my eye up the highway because Glasnow is out.
Yep.
Is he going to come back? And if he does, is he the impact pitcher that he's been all year? They just got back their guys. And the difference between the lineup that they had before and the one that starts Ohtani Betts Freeman is a big difference.
Well, obviously, Clayton Kershaw was a recent return.
Yep.
We didn't think he'd look that great when he was against the Padres. He's pitched really well since then, and the Dodgers are now kind of counting on him like he was old Kershaw again.
Yeah, I mean, Buehler's not doing great at all, and Glasnow now they said that he's not throwing yet, and when originally it was supposed to be 10 days, and now he's not throwing. So, yeah, Yamamoto, I mean, we handled him pretty good the first time. I mean, again, like, Tatis being obviously the main one, but I'll say this too. He's not coming back from injury. Potentially, he may not be coming back at all. But Yu Darvish is one for me that I just hope Yu's doing well and could see him. I mean, in my dumb Kenny Powers visions of him riding in on a white steed to save the season with a really fresh arm and a new perspective, potentially, Yu Darvish is one for me that I would absolutely love to see.
Yeah, Tony, the Padres clearly have some potential there. And I don't know, is being the fact that Fernando can be pretty fresh make a difference, when he comes back?
Fresh, not fresh, Fernando.
It's Fernando.
Fernando. So, certainly getting all the rest and hope, being healthy, I think, at the tip top. It's obvious it's Fernando. Outside of the Padres, I mean, Diamondbacks not having Ketel Marte and what he could mean coming back should he be able to get healthy. And you mentioned Walker Buehler. I don't expect that he'll continue to stink. He certainly is another dude you got to pay attention to as we turn the corner to September.
But he doesn't scare you. If he,
when he's on, I mean he's right there with Glass now and the rest of those guys.
It's just been such an awful year for him going into his free agency. I mean, I loved what he said the other day. He actually is like, don't ask me about free agency. That's for guys that are, you know, with a 2.50.
The way he's approached it is what scares me. It's like, yeah, he's not in denial of him struggling.
And Andy, just finally, part of me is glad. If Blake Snell had come back and pitched like Blake Snell a month earlier than he already had, the Giants might be a much bigger problem. He may have been too late, though, to save them at this point.
I mean, that's a big thing to look at with the Giants, because remember when he was going through his rehab stint, Blake was talking about how they were wanting him to come back, and he didn't feel yet that he was ready, and they were kind of, you know, pressuring him to come back to the big league club. And so will that be a key question mark for them going down the road? I mean, yeah, could be, or he could have come back too early and not been able to do the second half the way that he has already. So he knows his body. Maybe he had to make that call.
We've kind of given up on the Braves in a lot of ways, but they are still in the last position, and I do believe Ozzie Albies might be back before the end. They're not going to get Acuna or Strider, but
Austin Riley could give them.
Austin Riley maybe gives them a boost. Yeah. So, you know, the Braves, you know, we've kind of forgotten about them, and maybe that's to our, you know, mistake.
They've held on longer than maybe even I thought they were going to. Yeah. And as long as they're holding on, as we get, you know, as I said, you're running out the clock like a basketball team. If you've got a playoff spot, you want those games to tick by, and get down to zero at the end of September and see if you can hold on and just get in.
It's a very 90s NBA offense for you, just running out the clock. Yeah,
that's our Ben. 90s NBA
corners,
offense, baby.
You know, running around.
That's our
try
Benny.
To avoid the fouls. You know, just, you know,
set new manager of the Padres, Dean Smith.
All right,
Marbury's just going to dribble.
Four against four the Mets, quarters. And then we'll be nearing the end of a four-game series against the St. Louis Cardinals. Tony, enjoy the absolute sticky humidity.
Have so much fun.
But
we probably won't see you next week on the roundtable, but we'll catch you when you get back. Everybody else, thank you. We'll see you next Thursday. For Annie Halbrin, Tony Gwynn Jr., Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, and Chris Sello, I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by Roundtable Pizza. It's pizza royalty. Have a great rest of your day. So long, everybody.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.